This week on Dig Me Out.
Jay, we're back again with another episode thanks to our Dig Me Out Union on Patreon. You can help us make the next episode happen by joining us at dmounion.com or digmeoutunion.com. Speaking of the union, Jay, this is a union selected episode.
We need a triumphant theme song for all the union picks.
Dude, I have that. That's what you don't listen to the podcast. I have a fanfare, a trumpet fanfare.
Goes, oh, you do for that? Okay.
Yeah. I got all sorts of them. I got like ones that are like you know, obviously the history of the band and there's also a what else is there? When there's a tournament, I have like thunder and drums. Like it's got a whole thing here. I need like a slide list, like woo and stuff like that.
Really? Oh God. Okay.
I need some of those. Mm-hmm. This is picked by Adam Rogan. He is not joining us for this episode, as is his choice. He likes to listen in, and I completely understand. To be honest, I don't like to talk. I do this because it's the format, but, Adam has suggested in the past, he pointed this out, in 2014, he suggested the Din Pedals album.
Right.
That's a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And then he joined us at Patreon. And since then, he has suggested, back in 2023, he did Flew 13 in the Foul Key of V, which we did I believe last year, and then the year before that was Manticore by Lowcraft.
Right.
So those are all, these are, he's had some interesting picks, like stuff that doesn't necessarily fit into easy boxes in a lot of ways.
I think Din Pedals is the only one I'd heard before.
Right. Yeah. Me too. And he's keeping it. He's keeping the more obscure theme. Although when I was doing the Googling, I learned that this is a kind of one of those bands where like a lot of people really love this band, even though it's not well known. And I'm speaking of Dredge. I think that's how you pronounce it. It's Dredg. Had you heard of them, Jay?
I had only seen the name. And it stood out because it's stylized to what it's missing the E at the end. So that stood out to me, but that's it. I mean, I saw the name, saw an album cover. Had you ever heard them?
Again, I probably saw the album cover.
Yeah.
And went, oh, okay, interesting. And did not have an idea what they sounded like. He gave us what he liked and what he didn't, or what didn't work for him. So we'll be getting to that in the episode, but he gave us a little bit of info, which I'll share before we get into the history. He said, from what he's read, this is a concept album about a traveler's adventures. The album goes back and forth between songs and movements, with each track blending with each other. To me, this album sounds like a combination of Tool and Incubus. They did have records after this. So this is their debut, and it was, I believe, was either self-released or indie released.
And I think it was indie released in 98 and then re-released maybe in 2000.
Yeah. So the album we're talking about is Leitmotif, which is actually a musical term for a recurring musical theme associated with a particular piece of music, with a particular person, place, or an idea. An example of that would be like when you watch a certain like movie, and when a character enters and they always play like one song for that character, like an instrumental piece or whatever, that's their leitmotif.
Star Wars, John Williams stuff. Every character, or all the major characters, have themes that they.
Yep.
A lot of things they play with.
Exactly. Yep. Or if you watch like the Marvel movies, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So this was.
I didn't know that had a name.
There you go, Jay. So this was, yeah, like you mentioned, this was originally self-released on their own Woven Records in May of 1999. Then they were signed to Interscope, who just released it as is. Like, they changed the album artwork a little bit. The album artwork you've probably seen is just like the plain brown cover with Dredge, which stylized. The original cover is like, it's a script that I don't know what the origin of the language is, and then it's like a topographic map or a picture of a map.
Yeah, that's the one that's on Apple Music.
Okay.
Looks like a, yeah, mountain range or something.
So guess when they decided to re-release this album. Guess the date.
Oh, I'm looking at the date. September 11th, 2001.
Yeah.
Oh, guys.
So... not the best day to release a record in American history. Yeah.
Yikes.
Yes. So they stayed with Interscope for their next two records. El Celio, I think that's how you pronounce it, I'm probably wrong, was released in October of 2002. Catch Without Arms was released in June of 2005. And then they released after that, The Parrot, the Pariah, The Parrot, The Delusion on Olone Records Independent Label Group, which was, I guess, a subsidiary of Warner. Warner has a bunch of smaller labels. And then... the final record, Chuckles and Mr. Squeezy.
Okay.
Sounds like a not the record I was expecting, or title I was expecting, was released on Super Bowl Music in May of 2011. They've also done a live album, which was released in 2006, a number of EPs. And they did a soundtrack for an independent film called Waterborne, which came out in 2005. This was also re-released, I believe, in the 2000s at some point. Like, they did a limited run of vinyl pressing. And I don't believe that they are together at the moment. Except they did say... I guess back a few years ago that before COVID, again, this is before COVID, that they were toying around with recording some new music. But as far as I know, and according to the interwebs, in terms of Wikipedia and stuff like that, nothing has been listed as coming out. So we'll see. But right now, Chuckles and Mr. Squeezy is the last release. Sounds like a Primus song or album, right, or what have you. The band, four members. Gavin Hayes, vocalist, guitarist Mike Engels, bassist Drew Roulette, and drummer, pianist Dino Campanella. Out of Los Gatos, California, which I believe is not far from, it's in Santa Clara, and it's not too far from like San Jose and San Francisco, that sort of area.
Yep.
I don't know the California geography that well.
We're learning it.
We learn every time we learn. We got some comments over at Patreon from folks. And one very interesting one. I don't know if you've read through the comments on this episode, Jay, but I'll get to them here. Ian McIver said, the instrumentation is good. The level would get a worthy album. The vocals are trash and would rank the album as a decent single. I'm going to be generous and split the difference to go with a better EP. Not sure if I would listen to it again, though, so it may just collect dust. Still, Ian, I think that's two in a row better EPs.
Uh-oh. He's getting soft.
He is. You're softening up in your old age. Gavin said, for some reason, I read this was a 1991 release, and I'd like it more if that was true, in a Mantissa kind of way, where it doesn't all work, but they are trying. But I did lose interest a bit and tune out, so there's an EP for me. I think I would have liked it back in the day. Okay. And then this is an interesting one. Not that those aren't interesting, but this is some additional context for the band. Vadim Taver, our friend Vadim, said, like many, I got into them on El Cilio, which to this day is where I feel everything clicked with the band. The songs, recording quality, experimentation, creativity. I only later went back to Leitmotif and started to appreciate it. There are some really great musical ideas, and the foundation is there for the band to improve upon, which they did. It's not their best work, but for a debut album, I think it's really good. You can really hear the influence of the Sacramento bands of the time on one another, with Far, the Deftones, and Dredge having numerous shared sounds, stages, and histories. In the last 10 years, Drew, the bassist and visual artist of the band, and I became good buddies, playing in the same band on tour together in 2013, as well as having hung out and played dozens of chess games over the years, and I've gained nothing but even greater respect for him, and in turn, the rest of the band as artists. This band is a great example of what creativity can bring out of a group of very four talented musicians. So there you go. We have a Dig Me Out connection to the band through Vadim, who is always out on the road meeting people related to the podcast and spreading the word. So we appreciate it. And there's a bug on my screen. And I just squished a bug. Bye, bug. It's only March. Why are we getting bugs already? This doesn't... I guess I should just get used to that global warming stuff. Anyway, let's get into this record, Jay. Tell me what works for you on Leitmotif by Dredge.
I really like the guitar work on this album. It's inventive. It's doing things that don't sound exactly like anybody else, which is a feat, you know. It's progressive, in my mind. It's obviously got an alt rock and sort of metal flavor to it, but the way that they approach things from a guitar standpoint and really as a band, to me, feels like, you know, proggy, in that spirit, letting things, you know, build slowly and then kind of evolve and change. It's even got the, you know, it's a concept record. It's got the interludes. It's got a lot of the hallmarks of prog. But I think what they're bringing from a guitar standpoint and creativity standpoint is pretty interesting. So like Lechium is a good example where, you know, it's this heavy riff that kind of evolves to this really unique melody line on top. Yes, Cymbal Song and Movement One is another good example where that kind of, it's a two songs, but it really, to me, plays as one song. It's one long evolution of, you know, album introduces this kind of clean guitar riff that's, or it's more of a line that evolves into a riff and kind of changes and even moves into another song that is similar to it, but, you know, kind of playing with the similar themes, but, it's going somewhere. They're also doing a lot with tones. You know, there's clean tones, there's really compressed distortions, there's fuzzy tones. There's even like a dirty clean tone. There's acoustic, straight up acoustic track on here. There's a lot of use of effects where it's like not just, you know, adding reverb, you know, they're using tremolo on really extreme effects to, you know, craft guitar parts, which is interesting. So I really dug right away what the guitar was doing, and to my ears, that's the instrument that really guided me through the records on repeated listens, just kind of playing, listening with where the guitars are going to go and some of the stuff that they're coming up with here, that I enjoyed quite a bit. I think the last thing is there's some twists and turns, not only with what the guitar plays, but a good example would be they bring some piano in on movement two, which really, I think, opens the band up and gives it this whole new flavor that then as they play through the rest of the record, on songs like movement four, and even movement five, where they a little less volume, they get a little jazzy, a little psych, a little, you know, experimental. And I think that song that brings the piano and sets the stage for all of these different sort of areas they can go that aren't always just straight up, you know, build to a big, you know, double track big guitar chorus, which they do as well on this record. But there's some left turns here where you can hear them be a little bit more atmospheric, you know, just playing, performing differently, using their instruments differently. Things are more, a little bit more percussive. So I enjoyed some of those turns as well. You know, in terms of the spirit of, I think what they're trying to do with the concept record, it works pretty well to create these different moods and these movements that kind of pull you in and change up the space a bit. So what worked for you, Tim?
Well, like you, the guitar playing is pretty awesome. You mentioned in Lechium, I don't know how to pronounce that, but he does these like really quick, like little things that there's a little bit of like a jazz element to this, a little bit of a post rock sound. And I've seen them get labeled as progressive, but I don't really hear this as progressive per se. I guess when I think of progressive, I think of a lot of time changes and like really long, you know, 10-minute songs with multiple movements. Whereas, I mean, some of these songs are a little bit longer. They're 6.5, you know, or so minutes. But to me, you mentioned like the jazzy influence, the psychedelic, like trippy is a word I would use. Like there's parts of these songs where it's, I think lesser bands would struggle with the quiet parts. That's always tough to pull off. How do you play clean and make it interesting and keep the volume down? And they find a lot of interesting ways. I thought it was an interesting note that in the liner notes, they make a point that there's no samples or anything beyond them playing. So anytime you hear weird music or sounds, that's them. And I picked up on, like, you know, there were some interesting uses of like guitar pedals where you could tell that they were twisting the knobs and creating some really unique effects and dissonant sounds, frequency adjustments, that type of thing are happening. And that's, you know, a lot of bands don't play around with that on recordings because it's tough to actually capture exactly what you want and because you're dialing things and moving things around, you're not going to necessarily hit it the same time each, same way each time. So I like that they stretched out a little bit. I like that there are songs where there's either a very little vocal or no vocal, because a band like this, which is musically talented, can pull this off. There, at times it reminded me of, like, you know, an Explosions in the Sky, but without all the delay in that sense.
Yeah.
There's a touch, I don't know if you picked on it, like, I feel like there's just like a touch of Deftones and nu metal in some of the sounds. I think maybe it's the guitar tone.
And it's the, to me, it's the tone of the guitar, but also the tone of the drums.
Yeah. The snare. Like, yeah.
Trying to get a lot of low end out of the bass and then a high tuned snare. And then these guitars that are, can be extremely like compressed and big.
Mm-hmm. And it didn't bother me. Like, normally, you know, things that tend to get into the nu metal space, I tend to you know, it doesn't necessarily work for me, because I don't always love where that goes. But I feel like they, like Deftones, were able to do when they were messing around with that sound, and before they sort of stretched out into newer, more interesting areas, they have found a way to get that sort of heaviness. But, and Tool is a band that comes up a lot in when you read reviews and when you read comments on this band, to sort of meld that sound where you take these sort of like expansive, a little bit trippy, a little bit more indulgent arrangements, and then hit with the big compressed guitar, it ends up working out pretty well. I think the thing that, what happens is, like, it doesn't sound like, when you use that kind of compression, you know, you can kind of like shrink things when it's supposed to get loud. Yeah. And that doesn't seem to happen here. Like, they actually do a fairly good job of, like, when it needs to get loud, it gets loud.
Yeah.
So that's some of the stuff that worked for me. I want to share what Adam mentioned that worked for him to make this a worthy record. He said the production sounds both raw and clean at the same time. The vocals and guitar have an edge to them, yet the percussion and acoustics can all be heard quite clearly and effectively. The heavy songs hit hard. I love the distortion and how full the guitar sounds, especially in headphones. Great percussion all around. The variety of sounds and moods make this a very entertaining listen. And his favorite parts of the album are Cymbal Song, which is the opener, followed by Movement 1, Movement 3, and Penguins in the Desert. And I guess if you were going to go with, like, it's interesting, like the beginning half of Penguins in the Desert, like, oh, this is a very nu metal-ish kind of song. And then, like, it has this trippy breakdown with I don't know if he's using a delay on his guitar or what have you, but I wouldn't, like, new, like a Limp Bizkit couldn't pull that off. Like, they could not do that sort of a trippy-ish breakdown. It would just get quiet, and then Fredrik would start screaming again, or Korn or something like that. Like,
right.
This gets a little bit smarter, I feel like, than what those bands were able to pull off.
Yeah, it's like the quiet sections, I think, for the bands that you're talking about, they just, the quiet sections for those bands only exist to pay off the big part.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not how this band is operating. Like they have big parts and angry parts, but they also have these, you know, quieter parts that are psyche or a little experimental or sad or whatever, right? But they are their own thing, and they're not just there to make the big parts pay off.
He also mentioned movement one, which also is titled with some map coordinates.
Yeah.
I don't know what 45 degrees north, 180 degrees west ends up being. Like that to me is kind of indicative of like what really works for the for this band. Like it is on the edge of progressive, and it's on the edge of, you know, something a little bit more complicated, but it's not crazy. Like you don't have to be a music nerd to appreciate this.
Let's break that down a minute. So I think they're, to my ears, they're progressive in the, how they approach their instruments and dynamics, and in the same way that, you know, there's, I think there are similarities here to Tool in that way. What's different is that they're still using pretty straightforward song structures.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like this combination of like letting songs develop from an intro, and, you know, these drums that are like a big drum kit with lots of fills, and, you know, they'll kind of play off of one part and then evolve it to another part. You know, there's these hallmarks of like how to construct songs that are very like, to me, familiar in a progressive format, but they're breaking that by not, you know, writing 12-minute songs or 8-minute songs with non-conventional formats. These are still largely intro, verse, chorus, middle section, verse, chorus, you know, right, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's what they're doing within those is what's
right,
making it interesting. So what doesn't work for you on this record? If anything,
I think the vocal is inconsistent. I think it struggles to match what the band is doing. There's time where, you know, Lechium, I think musically is great. I think vocally it sounds like it's meandering, not finding its place. It's just kind of following the melody of the bass line. There's some moments with big choruses where you really want the vocal. I think that song's a good example where you really want the vocal to elevate the track.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen. You know, it's basically paying off because of the big guitars, instead of a big guitars with like, oh, this like transcendent, amazing vocal part. It's just not there. They do some stuff too, where they, other tracks where the vocal disappears or it's a different style, like Penguins in the Desert, all of a sudden there's this back and forth between like a melodic straightforward vocal and then this guttural kind of scream thing, which feels a little off. You know, I felt like at that point I kind of get what they were doing vocally, and then that song came in, I was like, wait a minute, it sounds like a different band. That song to Penguins in the Desert, I'm with you. I hear the more the new metal side of the band, and I'm less interested in that sound. It sounds like anybody. There's nothing unique about that mode for them. I agree. The middle section of that kind of saved that song to me. It gets, you know, much more interesting once they turn things down a bit.
Yep.
But, you know, the big chunk of that tune is just not a sound I'm interested in from this band. I think the last thing would be there are a couple moments here where the drums and the bass sound a little off, like not super clean. There's some transitions and switches from verse to chorus or little dynamic things that happen that just sound a little amateurish or not in time. They sound a little rushed or just little hiccups that you probably would expect listening to like an independently released album, which this is, even though I know eventually it gets re-released. But to my ears, I can hear some moments like that where it just sounds like, it's not quite polished, or that could have been a little cleaner. I'm kind of noticing flaws in the performance and the tracking that I kind of wish weren't there. I'm assuming that get resolved by the next record, but I definitely picked up on them here. What doesn't work for you?
Well, you know, I couldn't figure out quite what it was when I was listening to it the first couple of times. One of the minor things that I agree with you is the vocals aren't necessarily the best all the way through. I think part of that has to do with the fact that I don't think they're ever doubled at any point. I think it's just him by himself basically the whole time. I feel like for some of those choruses, it would benefit to be doubled or have a harmony in there or something like that, or a counter melody, you know, something happening. When you actually, so the last track, the actual song is only like a minute or something, or 2 minutes. And then there's a bunch of dead space. And then there's like this terrible jam at the end of the album. If you take that 20 minutes out, if this is like a 38 minute album, I started to realize like this feels too short. Like even though these songs, even though you have a couple of like 6 minute and a half songs, a couple of 4 minute songs, this is actually a fairly short album for being a quote unquote, you know, alternative metal, progressive rock, whatever you want to call it.
Concept album.
Concept album. And it almost feels a little thin in that respect. I think I needed like just one or two more straightforward like rock songs just to kind of give a little bit of energy here and there. Cause there's a lot of stuff that's in that like halftime swing kind of thing. Like dun, 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 dun. A lot of metal bands kind of work in that space. They get into that 3-4 and which is fine. I just needed like just one or two short rockers in here to melt my face off. Didn't happen.
Even within, you take out that 20 minute track, even within like traversing through the Arctic cold, that has a lot of bloat at the end of that song.
Yes.
You could trim up, if you got rid of all the extra bloat, you're probably down to less than 30 minutes. You know, there's some blipping and blooping, and there's some like spoken stuff.
Yeah.
You know, even within what's left there, there's plenty to continue trimming.
That song is really only 4 minutes.
Yeah. If you want to get down to that, and then to your point, like you probably got room for another, you know, tight rocker or two.
And that's actually what Adam brought up in the stuff that didn't work for him. He said the sound effects, there's 2.5 minutes of sound effects. It's like 30 seconds would have been enough to get your point across. And then the hidden track is unnecessary. It's a poor recording of the band just jamming, and it ruins the flow of the album. And I will agree, it ruins the flow because there's some like really high pitch frequency things happening, and I was laying down listening to this, and when that came on, it like ruined my mellow. Just being like, you're like, what is going on? Please stop what you're doing there.
I'm wondering, the CD version might have been a hidden track that you could have got around, but now it's tacked on to track 10, so
yeah,
you're kind of stuck there.
I don't know what the, it doesn't make sense to me. Just because you have this well-constructed album where you clearly put in a lot of thought in terms of the arrangement, in terms of dynamics. I mean, this is an album full of dynamics. And then to have this like two-chord jam and the record, it really leaves it on a, like a kind of a sour note, which I was like, I don't ever want to listen to that again.
not the first record we've reviewed that has done that.
Exactly. Which is a shame because I want to finish a record and immediately start it over.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't happen with this one. This one I go, okay, well, I'm going to go listen to something else and cleanse my palate.
In the 90s, we wanted to exhaust you.
Yeah.
We just wanted you to like break your will.
Which is so counterintuitive to, if you think about it in terms of a corporation. You don't, when you order a bag of chips, when you buy a bag of chips, it's not full to the top. They're not fitting all the chips in there. So why were people trying to fill CDs? Like, why did you need 68 minutes of music on a CD? Just,
it was a bad combination of like, I don't know, who knows, but felt like bands trying to be rebellious and like, I'm gonna do what I want to do. This is a track I've always wanted to make.
Well, I'm just thinking like,
labels like putting out so much stuff that they're not even paying attention.
You know, if you look at Soundgarden put out three albums in the 90s, right? Bed Motor Finger, Super Unknown, and Down on the Upside. All mm-hmm. those albums are probably equal to like five or six 70s albums. Yeah. They could have been putting out an album every year.
Right. Well, yeah, we're getting into this on our 80s metal podcast. We were talking about Saigon Kick recently, and they were an example of like in the 70s and early 80s, bands were putting out two albums a year.
Yeah.
Not an album every year. They were putting out two albums every year.
Yep. Or if you were George Clinton, you were putting out an album with Funkadelic, you're putting out two albums with Parliament, right. and you were touring, and it's like, what?
Yeah. You tour for 3 months, record an album, tour for 3 months, record an album. You were working, man.
Let's get into our overall ratings on this record. I will share the poll results from Patreon in just a moment. But Jay, where do you land? Is this a better EP? Were the album a better EP or a decent single?
I'm going to go with a worthy EP based on what we're talking about here. By the time you cut out the nonsense, I think the middle of the record for me is a little soft. Transversing through the Arctic through Penguins in the Desert starts to lose the script a bit or lose interest, and then it picks up again towards the end with some curveballs that I think work really well.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time you trim out all the nonsense and then you cut out a couple of the tracks that aren't working, you know, you're for me, I'm in solid EP territory at that point. You know, probably at a sub 30 minute, sub 25 minute even EP.
Right.
And I agree with you that there's probably a song or two that could have been written for this album that would have really like brought it together and gave it that big crescendo moment that I think it's missing. Where would you land?
Same boat. Like, this really is an EP when you get rid of the nonsense. I mean, you really have like almost 20 minutes of nonsense on this record. So when you cut through that, then you're looking at like 35 minutes, which is, you know, really just an EP. We're not even in album territory yet. You got to get up to at least 40 minutes for it to be an album. Yeah. I think personally, two 20 minute sides. So what did you say? A worthy EP? I mean, that's kind of what it is.
Yeah.
Cause it's the music again, it's really interesting. I like putting it on. This is the kind of stuff I like look for when you have instrumental, like post-rock, progressive rock bands where I can just like put on that and minimalistic lyrics and work to that kind of stuff or write to that kind of stuff. It's ideal for that. But I think the songs where there are, where they're lyric driven, I guess you'd say, I would have just liked to have heard I would like there to take the experimentation and the talent that they show with the actual music and push the vocals a little harder.
Yeah. Yep. It sounds like the musically they're working really hard, and then vocally they're not quite there yet. I mean, there's some cool ideas. There's like some mm-hmm. chanting stuff he does. It's kind of neat. There's also some tracks where they push the vocal like in the distance and he's almost like part of the room that I think actually worked kind of well.
Yeah.
But it's just not enough. You know, it needs that. I think the, you know, guitar wise, at least, even drum wise, you know, there's some stuff going on here that's next level and the vocals just not there.
Yeah. So our folks at Patreon, 71% were the album, 29% better EP. That's not bad.
Yep.
That's a pretty good showing for Adam and his pick. Congrats, Adam. Again, I mean, we've had some interesting records that, you know, the Flu 13 record last year, the Low Manticore album, which was a really interesting, strange, kind of like glammy record.
Somebody brought that up in the comments, right?
Yeah.
Of this record.
I think so.
Yeah, I think you mentioned it.
And so we appreciate you bringing this to us and being a part of the union, because this is the kind of stuff that, again, like, I don't think I would have ever dredged this out, to so to speak, of the swamp of releases.
Yeah.
And we learned a new word, which is leitmotif. So that's a good thing too. If you would like to be like Adam and suggest an album for the podcast, you can do that in one of two ways. You can either join us at Patreon and become a patron, a DMO Union member at dmounion.com or digmeoutunion.com. You can suggest albums. You can join it for the 90s rock podcast. You can also join our 80s metal podcast and suggest albums for that. I mean, you can do both. If you just want to throw money at us, that's totally fine. We'd be happy to accept that. And you can suggest an album at digmeoutpodcast.com. That's where you go to the submit an album link, drop your artist album and a little note in there about why you're submitting it, and it'll make it into a future poll. We've had some interesting ones recently where I did not know the name of, I did not know the band. Like, usually they come across and I'm like, yeah, we probably should have done that one now. We should have done that one now. And then there's been a couple where I was like, I don't know. I've never even heard of that band. Where did that come from? Like that. Like, yeah. Like somebody mentions like Portishead. I'm like, and that was Vadim. like, of course. Yes, we should get to that. And then there's these other ones.
Did you know New Fast Automatic Daffodils?
I've heard that name before.
But Count Raven.
Nope.
How about David Vavian, Vananian and the Phantom?
Nope.
See, there you go.
Yeah, see.
That was just the last poll. Pop Unknown.
Who now what?
Pop Unknown.
Nope.
See?
And that's our poll that's in there now?
That was the last one we ran.
Oh, the last one.
Which, your album lost.
Son of a...
Oh, wait, did it win? No. Or did you win?
I think you... I better. You got to stop messing with me here. I got to win something eventually. I'm getting really down. I mean,
you can't win your own podcast poll.
Come on. Wait, what did I have? Was it the supergrass?
Yeah.
I mean, it's an abomination that we have not talked about supergrass.
It won. You're good.
Oh yeah. I won the first round along with,
that was the only round we're doing that month. So you won. That's the album we're going to do.
Yes.
Yep.
I'm a winner. Finally.
You finally got to pick a record on your own podcast.
It's been so long. I forgot how to do it. It's been so long. That's amazing. That beat out some good records too.
Whitetown, Temple of the Dog, and then Damn Beal.
F you, Whitetown. No, I'm just kidding. I have no anger about that. And we'll be soon doing our new aughts episode for 2024. We have one that was part of our poll from the end of last year that we'll be doing. And then we just put up a poll that currently has a couple of days left on it. Although by the time this comes out, it probably will be over. But we just have our poll for our next aughts episode. We do six of those a year. We've got a whole back catalog of not only aughts episodes, but like two dozen 80s episodes exclusive to our Dig Me Out community. Also, you can sign up for the box newsletter at digmeoutpodcast.com. It's our Substack newsletter, which has releases every week of, or a list every week of new releases for 80s, 90s, and aughts relevant music, books, movies, documentaries, that kind of stuff. And also, you get a, when we do these polls, we do a little history of the band on the each of the band that's in the poll, so you can learn about, you know, stuff like Supergrass, or what was it, Count Raven? Was that the one that you said?
Yep. Or Whitetown, or Temple the Dog. Or...
there you go. See? So it's education.
We get to a lot of them. We don't get to all of them, but
true.
We try to do as many as we can.
And then finally, Apple Podcasts is where you go to leave positive feedback for the program. So for Jay, I'm Tim. We're out, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Dig Me Out.